Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We've had a wonderful series of interviews of people who are doing research, and it's a huge range these days because, as you know, there's another generation coming up, and this generation is into a different way of being. With information. And for us old fogies like myself, who will be 65 this year, shocking, sometimes it's challenging and sometimes it's really innovative. I loved my interview last week with Justin Stein, who really pushed up against some of my understandings about research and about how Reiki is seen and how we honor our ancestors and how we create understanding, not just mind understanding, but body understanding, like the understanding of ancient knowing. And I feel that this ancient knowing is the place where Reiki takes us. I feel like, you know, every beginning student goes, well, what do I do if this happens? And what if I do if that happens? And we all want to know information. But as we practice, Reiki itself takes us deeper into who we are and allows us to go to this place of what I call ancient understanding, or this very beautiful place where humanity actually resides and where our spirit resides. And it's really been fun to explore this from another perspective. And Robert Fuston is on with me today, and he's another researcher, or was maybe another researcher. He and I have just met a couple of weeks ago, and I had the great pleasure of asking him if he would be interviewed, and here we are. I'm very excited about this interview, and I'm interested to know where we're going to go, Robert.
Me too.
Great. Well, thank you for saying yes. And, of course, I love starting with Reiki stories. So if you could share your Reiki story with us, that would be so wonderful.
Okay, sure. I was first made aware of something called Reiki in 1995. I was a member of a book club, and I got this letter through the mail saying, join this book club, and you get to buy so many books for one penny, and then you have to purchase so many other books at regular price. So I was going through their catalog and looking for the books that I wanted, and I'd already made all my free selections, and I had one left over, one more free one to get. So I was just kind of browsing, and I saw this book, and I thought it said Reiki, because I didn't know it was pronounced Reiki at the time. I was like, Reiki, what's this Reiki thing? And I read a little description, and it said something about, hands-on energy work, and something about Japan, and I thought, I don't really know about this. I wasn't really into anything of the sort at the time. I was a junior in college at the time, and I had not been interested in this kind of energy work or anything about it. So, but the book was free, right? So I thought, what the, I'll go ahead and buy it, So it, I bought it, and it came in the mail, and it sat on my bookshelf for a whole year. And one day I was, looking at my bookshelf, all these books I had bought and never read, and I decided, I got to read some of these books. So I pulled this Reiki book off the shelf, and I read the introduction. And it said, well, to be able to practice Reiki, you have to, have initiations from a master. And I thought, well, that's the end of my Reiki story. I closed the book because I thought, I'm up here in Bowling Green, Ohio. I don't know any Reiki masters around here. I doubt there's anybody in Ohio that does this. So I just put the book back on my bookshelf. And the story continues because later that week, I went to a tea shop where I used to, they had open mic night, and I used to play percussion, so I'd sit in on drum set and play a little bit. So on a break, I'm just walking around, heading towards the bathroom, and on the hallway, there's a bulletin board, and there's a sign on that bulletin board pinned, and it said, Reiki class now available. And I did like a double take because I was like, what? Reiki class? I was like, I can't believe it. You know, I just read about this Reiki class thing, this whole Reiki idea. So I called the guy up and I said, you know, I'm interested in taking the Reiki class. And he said, well, I'm visiting here from Maui. So if you want to take a Reiki class, you'll have to set up a class for me to teach, and I need at least 5 students. And I said, okay, no problem. You know, and of course I'm thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I decided I'm going to make this happen because this sounded interesting. Plus there was a challenge.
Right.
So I convinced, you know, several of my friends. I said, oh, you got to take this Reiki class. And they're like, well, what is it? I'm like, I'm not sure. It's something about like, energy and hands, and you know, the energy come out your hands and you can heal stuff. And I really wasn't all that knowledgeable myself. So, but anyway, I convinced them and they just said, okay, we'll take the class if only just to please, you know, and shut Robert up about it. So that was October 28, 1996 that I first experienced Reiki. And I remember during the class, that the guy said, you have to practice every day on yourself, you know, self-treatment every single day. And I thought, okay, I'll do the self-treatment. And, you know, I had tried to, you know, do things like this before in terms of like, I've taken Tai Chi, you know, before and, you know, I just don't follow up, you know, it's hard to get into a new habit, you know? So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this Reiki self-treatment. So I started, and of course I felt nothing, you know, I didn't feel anything spectacular, no, you know, magic light show or anything like this, but I kept practicing anyway, because I thought to myself, well, I paid this guy money, and if I don't practice now, I'll never start like a year from now, just on a whim. I have to do it now. I paid this guy money. I think he ripped me off, but just to make sure, I'm going to practice, like he said, and see if anything happens. And so that's what I did.
Great.
Yeah. And so, you know, a month goes by. I still don't feel anything. But I noticed changes happening to my body. And, you know, old things had cleared up. So I was very, very interested in this. So I asked my friends, you know, this bright idea came to me one day. I thought, why don't we all get together, you know, the ones that were in the class with me, and why don't we practice Reiki on each other? And they said, okay, yeah, let's do that. So then we started practicing on each other. And, of course, we're poor college students, so we didn't have a table. You know, we just put a blanket on the floor and then just sat down on the floor and treated each other. So we do that about once a week, get together to do that. Plus the self-treatment. And I'd say 6 months went by and I was just, you know, happy just practicing. And one day it just, a thought just, you know, popped in my head that, oh yeah, there's like Reiki 2. You know, it just never occurred to me that there was anything more. You know, so my teacher, of course, was gone. I mean, he was back in Maui. So I was saying, well, that's probably the only teacher that will be around. You know, maybe he'll come back. You know, I'm not sure. So it was very shortly after I had this thought that I'm just kind of wandering around looking through window shops. And I saw another sign. an actual sign, you know, Reiki class, you know, Reiki teacher, blah, blah, blah. And so I called the number and this guy answers. And I said, oh, I took a Reiki class, you know, 6 months ago. And I want to learn Reiki too. And he said, well, I just became, you know, a Reiki teacher. So I'm only really interested in teaching level 1 right now. And I was like, oh. And he's like, but I can send you to my teacher. And I thought, oh, that's even better, you know. So one of the people from the original Reiki group with me, who took Reiki 1 with me, decided he wanted to go on the Reiki 2 as well. And so that's what we did. We took the class. And then it was shortly after that that I was going to be moving from Ohio to South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew nothing about South Carolina. I mean, I knew that they were what I would consider more conservative folk. But that was it, because I'd never been there, really. So I thought, oh, I bet there's no Reiki people in South Carolina. This is how I'm thinking, right? First, there's no Reiki people in Ohio. Now, of course, there's not going to be Reiki people in South Carolina. So, right. You know, anyway, I tell my Reiki 2 teacher, look, I'm going to be moving to South Carolina. And she's like, well, do you want to become a Reiki teacher before you go? And I said, I thought it was soon, but I said, yeah, I want to, because I really don't think I'm going to find anybody down there. So I went ahead and we did some training, and that training, the initial training was, in the later part of 97, I believe. Then I moved, but luckily, we had email, you know, back then. So I was able to keep in contact with my teacher, and my family still lived in Ohio. So whenever I go back to Ohio, I would also make a special trip, a couple hours farther north to meet with my teacher, and we have Reiki share and things like that.
That's great.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, the thing was, when I got to South Carolina, of course, I started looking for Reiki people.
Uh-huh.
And I did find some, and I was surprised. But, you know, with talking with them, I was becoming aware that, you know, what I had learned was different from what they had learned. So I thought, oh, what's going on with that? You know, I thought something's not adding up here. So I started talking to more people. And there was a few books on Reiki back then. Right. And I wanted to find out, why has everybody learned something different? Because that was really bugging me. I talked to as many people as I could, read as many books as I could. And then I decided, well, this isn't working, you know, because now everything's contradicting itself. Everybody's contradicting their own teachings. And so I thought, well, I know that Mrs. Takata had died in 1980, but I also was told that she had trained 22 master students, but I didn't have a list. And this was, you know, some of this was before we had a lot of websites up, you know, this was before Google, you know, existed.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we have to put that into context that for me, it was very hard to even get a list of the 22 master students at Takata.
Right.
And sometimes I'd see a list and there'd be question marks and names misspelled and then wrong people, just simply wrong people on the list.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, you know. So I'm in South Carolina and I decided to start a master's program, library and information science. And through that program, I learned researching skills and how to collect, organize, and analyze data. And this helped me finally connect with a woman named Fran Brown, one of the Takata's master students. And I'd send her emails, and I asked her, you know, some questions, very simple questions, you know, like, I learned, you know, such and such, you know, technique or whatever. I said, did Takata teach this? And she'd write back yes or no, very short answers. And finally, I decided that enough of what I had learned was some kind of altered, you know, form than from what Takata had taught. So I decided I want to take the training over again. But I asked Fran Brown to retrain me, and this was like in 99, and she said no.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I said, why not? You know, she's like, because I've done this before. Retrained people before, who had been trained as masters from somebody else, and she had a bad experience once. Somebody retrained with her and then went back to their old ways of teaching, and she didn't like that at all. So she didn't want to do that again. And so I just kind of let it, you know, lay low a little bit. But I kept emailing her anyway, you know? And so I decided, well, I don't know how to contact a lot of these people. I haven't found them yet. But Fran did put me in touch with several of them, like Shinobu Saito. And I think she led me to George Araki, but I'm not sure if I ever got to talk with him. But many of them she got me into contact with, Takata students. So I was very happy because the more, you know, I practiced Reiki, the more I felt drawn to learn, you know, how Takata taught Reiki. And because at first I was given this form that I later discovered didn't resemble that form that she had, I was just, there was this burning desire inside me. I want to know the form, you know, I want to know the form. And I had several teachers along the way, and some of them were pretty wise in the respect that they kept telling me things like, you know, to basically stop asking so many questions, just practice, you know, practice, you know, hands on. So Fran wouldn't train me, and I found John Harvey Gray was still alive and teaching. So I went out there and took Reiki 1 and 2 from him, but you know, he also had added a couple things in there, including the chakras and stuff. So I really didn't want to continue on because I wanted to know how Takata taught the form. And I was trying to pay people along the way to teach me less stuff, essentially. You know, it's kind of funny. I'm like, please, here's some money. Don't teach me a bunch of stuff. I just want the Takata form. I don't want you to change things. But this was so difficult. I mean, it was so difficult. So, you know, I went to several people for training, and finally, you know, Fran Brown said, oh, okay, you convinced me, you know? And I was like, wow, you know, I can't believe it, you know, finally, because she'd always been so upfront with me and said, I teach how Takata taught me Reiki. I haven't changed anything. So I was very, very happy.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was now living in Colorado, attending Southwest Acupuncture College. And so so I finished my master's program, and then like literally like 2 weeks later, I was in another one. And this one was 4-year program. So we had a very strict absentee policy there, which meant you couldn't miss any classes.
Wow.
Now, if you're sick, guess what? You go to school anyway, which in hindsight, they finally changed that rule because people would come in sick.
And then everybody would be sick.
Half the class and the professor would get sick. So they finally saw the error of their ways. But I wanted to go to acupuncture school because I had this desire to practice Reiki full time.
Uh-huh.
But I felt like this was in 99 when I graduated with my master's library information science. At that point, I thought, I want to do Reiki full time, but I also want to eat.
Right.
And I don't think right now I'm going to be able to earn a living doing this. So, you know, I'd like to have some kind of credentials, you know, credentials and some kind of like license, you know, to do this. And one day, you know, this word acupuncture jumped out in my mind, and I was, you know, working as a graduate assistant at the medical library in South Carolina. So I started checking out the books on acupuncture there and said, oh, this is what I'm going to do next. So that's what I did. And so I'm studying acupuncture, and Fran finally agrees to retrain me. But she says, meet me in France in like 2 days. That was like that. She's like, I'm giving a master intensive training over, I think it was like over 5 or 6 days. And it was for people like me who, you know, had been trained, but not in the, you know, Usui Shiki Ryoho. So I, you know, she's like, write me back right away though, because I'm leaving, you know. And I was like, oh, I want to go so bad, you know. But I was like, I can't just like, you know, blow off a whole week of class. They tend to notice that kind of thing. So
yeah, really.
Yeah, but I've heard back. So I can't do it. You know, I can't do it. I said, but please let me, you know, when you come back, we'll reconnect and then we'll get together. And well, she comes back and she decides at that point that she was going to retire from training masters. And I was, you know, she wasn't going to take on a new masters, put it that way. And I was like, oh my gosh, I missed my opportunity. I blew it, you know? So that was a downer for me, really.
I can imagine.
Yeah, because I'd finally gotten the okay. So a couple years later, I'm still in acupuncture school. And, you know, I hear that some Japanese masters were going to come to Toronto, Hiroshi Doi and Jacquetin Inamoto.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I knew that Jacquetin's teacher was a Reiki 2 student of Hayashi. So I was like, okay, so I want to go up there and you know, do some training and see, you know, if I can get some more traditional training and something similar to what Takata had taught. So that was, unfortunately, the whole week that they were up there doing training for people happened to be during midterms.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so I, this time I was like, okay, I can't. I learned my lesson with missing France. So I went to the director of the school.
Wow.
And I said, Valerie, I have a problem. And she's like, oh, yeah? And I said, yeah, I have a problem. There's this training I want to do. I explained all about Reiki. And I said, you know, Reiki's what got me to acupuncture school anyway. So I'm here. And she's like, oh, so basically you have a life outside of school is what you're telling me. I'm like, yes, that's what I'm telling you. And she's like, so what's the problem? And I said, well, the problem is the week of the training is midterms week.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and she looks at me and she's like, you know, we have a no absence policy, right? And I'm like, yes, yes, I know this. And she's like, all right, well, let me ask you a question then. I said, okay. She's like, if you don't go in 5 years from now or 10 years from now, will you still regret it? And I said, absolutely. I will regret not going. And she said, okay, then you can go.
Wow.
Yeah, but.
But.
Like, oh, no, here's a but, you know. But you fail all your midterms. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh, it's horrible. She's like, but you can retake them for the retake fee. And I'm like, okay, what's the retake fee? It was like $150 per midterm. And I had like 5 or 6 midterms.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. Plus the cost of the trip and all that stuff that I wanted to come up with. And I said to her, all right, I'm going on the trip then. I'm going. And she said, okay. She's like, you understand that, you know, the professor's going to have to rewrite all the midterms just for you. And that's why you're being charged this fee. I said, yes, I understand. I said, but to me, it's worth it. She's like, okay. So that's what I did.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and then the irony, right? I go up there, do the week-long training with those two masters. I come back. I have an email from Fran Brown.
Oh, no.
Yes, she says, okay, I'll train you if you still want the training. And I was like, what? Because I had always kept in contact with her, even when she said she was done. And I came back, and there was that email. And I was like, all right, things are rolling my way. You know, I was like, this is incredible, you know. So I write her back. This was late 2002, I believe. And I said, okay, how do we begin? You know, so we started making financial arrangements and for me to come out there to California to watch her teach. And her and I had this conversation, you know, before about who I trained with, but since I just came back from training with Jacquetin, she's like, oh, I know him. You know, I met him when I was in Japan. And she's like, if you've taken training with him, then why do you want to take the training with me? I said, well, because he's got his own style now, you know, and I want to learn how Takata, you know, how Takata did the practice. And she's like, oh, okay. So anyway, we got together and redid the Reiki 1 and 2 training during one of her classes. And then I flew to France with her to meet her over there. She would teach twice a year at this place called Kagyuling. It was like, it was a Tibetan monastery. So, but there were some unfortunate health issues she was dealing with. Her memory was what the problem was. So there was a big issue with that, which I really wasn't aware of until I met her in person. And, you know, every time we end up having the same conversation, unfortunately, she'd always ask me, now, who did you train with? How far along in the training have we gotten? And this started really worrying me. And we couldn't connect. You know, I really wanted to connect to my teacher. I really wanted to connect. And it just seemed like we couldn't, you know. This was some kind of barrier to developing a relationship with her. Mm-hmm. So I had a conversation, you know, about this, you know, with her. And she's like, yes, I know. My memory, you know, is pretty bad. And she's like, I can always guarantee you that there will be another master student, you know, or a master I've trained with me every time we do master training. I said, okay, that sounds fair enough, you know. We had this conversation, we were in France, and but the next day, you know, we were back to, you know, who did you train with again? And I was disheartened. I was disheartened. So we had a discussion, and we decided to, although we'd done a little master training, we decided to end my training. And she told me I was going to be the last master student she had tried to teach. And it turns out, I found out years later that I wasn't. She had taken on several others. But so at that point, you know, after spending time with Fran, I had finally come to a place in my own practice where I just felt very content with what I had learned. You know, all these questions I had, you know, they just didn't feel like so important anymore. I mean, Fran kept saying, trust what you have, trust what you have. And so I just kept practicing and practicing and practicing. So basically my research kind of, you know, talking with the master's initiate from Takata, that kind of stuff kind of fell to the wayside for many years, because I just, that burning desire was finally quenched, or quenched, I'm not sure which, but it was, you know, it was just like I was in a very different space.
Uh-huh.
And you know, during this whole journey, you know, my Reiki journey, I just, you know, I was so much after the form, you know, because right. I was, exactly. Because, you know, I was set off on that path from my first, you know, Reiki teachers. When I started discovering things were changed and altered, I went down this path, and I went down it with a lot of worry and sometimes anger, like, oh, how could they, you know, change this, or worried, oh, what if I don't know something? And, you know, in other words, I had a lot of time and a lot of opportunity, you know, to practice the Reiki precepts. And
right.
helped miserably on many occasions. But, you know, that had to happen. And now I look back on my training, with all my teachers, with gratitude, because without having first learned, you know, I'd say like more of a modern westernized Reiki form, I may not have, you know, if I was given, let's say, Takata's, you know, teachings right. by somebody who knew them to begin with, I may, you know, have just, I definitely wouldn't have gone on this path. And this path had led me to talk with, speak with, and train with so many, you know, wonderful people, that I now see it as this was how it was supposed to be, you know, for me. And it was frustrating at times. But now I've learned so much. So I was content with just that practice, you know, and that I had. And years had gone by, and I didn't do any more research. And things would come my way. People would send me things, and I just kind of file them away. But then there came a point where I think one of the big wake up calls for me was when I heard that Fran had passed.
Uh-huh.
And she had made her transition. And I was surprised. I mean, it really impacted me in a way that it's hard to explain. I mean, we had fallen apart, you know, at the end. So we hadn't had much contact for, several years, I think, at that point. It just really hit me hard. So I thought to myself, well, these people that really knew Takata's practice, I know they're teaching other people, but, you know, the opportunity to study with them is definitely waning.
Yeah.
You know, and then I found, you know, then after that, you know, John Harvey Gray passed and made his transition, who was, you know, and so that, you know, as time goes on, you know, people move on, and make their transition. So I decided, okay, well, I'm going to find some people that, that I know at least practice the form, you know, or at least how I think. So in 2011, I can't remember now. It was only a couple of years ago, but I ended up traveling a lot, to study with the various, Takata lineages. One person, was in the Mary McFadden, lineage, and, there was a woman, Marsha Holligan, who trained, as a master in 1983 with, Barbara Weber, back when it was a three-level system with Barbara. So I was really interested in learning that. And I also studied with a woman named Helen Borth, who was a student under Barbara McCullough, and one person who was a master student under John Harvey Gray. And I think it was almost like my final hurrah in some respects, because I was really interested in at least comparing the teachings from these four different Takata masters. And of course, most of the stuff was so similar, you know, it was really redundant. But my mind thought, you know, this is it. You know, I need to study with people who had studied with these people who either are no longer around or, you know. So that's kind of led me today, you know, where I'm at today, just so much practice, and no more research, really. I mean, no more questions, really. Yeah. So I don't know if you got anything out of that, but that's my Reiki story. I'm sticking to it. So.
Well, it's an amazing story, really. I'm so impressed by your perseverance. And what I guess the question that is interesting to me, but it doesn't come out of a, I don't know. I just want you to trust where it comes from, and that is that I'm just fascinated to know why you didn't end up coming to one of our classes or our teaching.
Ah, one of your classes, meaning?
Well,
I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah. So Paul and I have done these Usui intensives for many years.
Right.
Now we're up to 20, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like a place for people like you.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just fascinated by that, because what has happened actually in our history is that most of the people who come to these intensives, well, not most, but I would say a goodly number, are people who are initiated in the practice and who want to keep, you know, they say keep up with our insights or our understandings, because they understand that as we grow in our practice, so does our understanding grow. And
right.
So that was kind of a shock to both Paul and I think, in the beginning, because we thought we were providing some kind of service for people like you who were on the search.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up providing a service for our own students in some ways. So that was very that was fascinating for me.
Well, that would have been the easier route. Okay. that would have been perhaps the easier route. And I think that, you know, one of my, things about like in 2011 or 12 or when I think it was 11, when I did all these, the four master trainings with the four, you know, master students of somebody of the 22, I wanted to, you know, like I said, compare them. And I think I was so anal about that because originally what I had been given, you know, back in 96 and 97 was modified. And so I was trying to really, you know, make sure, like, okay, this is really it, you know, and cross-check and verify and going to, like, an Asui 1 or Asui 2 intensive would have been perhaps the easier route in terms of, well, in terms of a lot of things. But, yeah, just...
It wasn't your path. I think that's so fascinating. Yeah.
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 That's great. And I just really appreciate your sense of humor because I find for myself that Reiki has given me a path and I wasn't at all happy with it and for like I would say 10 or 12 years. And now I'm really at peace with the way that I came to it. But in doing that process of being at peace with how I came to Reiki, I have a lot of empathy for people. And I also see that, you know, Reiki gives us a path. And for some reason, that's how we need to follow it. So I really celebrate the individuality of each of our paths. And that's why I love listening to the Reiki stories, because although they have very similar themes, the story itself and how it weaves in with your own personality and your decision-making qualities and so on, just give me this ongoing awe that each of our paths is like a little, is like a series of miracles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, and everything is perfect. And for me, who is a perfectionist, I like to think I was born on the very cusp of Leo and Virgo. And there's this kind of Virgo part of me that just has to have every detail perfect, you know, and, which has not served me in my life, let me tell you. And... and has led me on some pretty wild goose chases while I've really forgotten the essence of what I'm into. And I think that's why my show is labeled, you know, I called it The Balance of Form and Essence, because it has been my struggle for my whole life in Reiki and for my whole life, basically. And Reiki is this wonderful opportunity to keep this practice happening daily. You know, this balance of, you know, what's important and what's my priority and what really serves me and all those people around me. So,
right.
I hear the similarities in our stories in that way. So it's really wonderful. Thank you. You're a great storyteller and have a great sense of humor, which is always really good in these situations. So, I have a question for you, and I just this comes out of my own belief system, and I'm really interested to get your take on it.
Yeah.
You know, and when I took Reiki, and the message that I got from my master and my grandmother both, because somehow they come together for me in my mind, but they're really two personas on some level, depending on if I'm the grandchild or the Reiki student.
Right.
And, you know, the message that we got was, you know, this is the path, I'm your master. And so that translated into this assumption that it's the best to have one master. And if you can't have one master, at least one path.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, in your story, it just demonstrates the capacity of one human being to take so much teaching of this one system. And I would imagine, so you can tell me if I'm correct or not, or accurate or not, coalesce this into your own, not your own style, but you've been able to put aside some of the things that you were taught and taken up some of the other things. And there must be a place inside of you that feels like, yes, this is Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And that you, this is what you practice in the moment. And I'm, you know, I can appreciate that. So number one, I want to check on my assumption about you, but also about how it's felt to you to have all these different initiations and all these different teachings, because you've really done the gamut.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. I can't imagine doing that myself. So I'm really interested in that.
Well, it's something that I'm still processing in some ways, mm-hmm. You know. But, I mean, right now I think that, you know, when I finally had, you know, finished, you know, quote, finished, you know, going from one teacher to another teacher, you know, to basically use my mind to see what the teachings, you know, were similar and what was different. There was a whole nother underlying process going on in myself where these kind of questions were coming from a different place, you know, a different place. And it wasn't this, you know, this huge, like, I gotta know, like, you know, exactly, you know, this, you know, it was coming from the place like, I like to hear the stories that, you know, they had heard, or, it wasn't so much about like, oh, if they learned a new technique or something different from somebody else, it wasn't like that anymore. It was, well, it was like, you know, a couple weekends ago when we were in, Tubac, you know, and I got to listen to you speak, and I got to, listen to Rick Bochner speak. And so it was wonderful because, you know, sometimes people have different, you know, they have different experiences and different Reiki stories and how they came into Reiki. And I think that that all kind of goes in, and gets kind of assimilated into somebody else. And, you know, to hear other people's stories, I mean, you learn so much that how much variety there are, and how different people learn and how different people came to Reiki. And so there was a discovering, really, is what you probably call the essence of Reiki, you know, because the form, to me, you know, having, you know, quote, discovered the form finally, you know, it just seemed like it there was a process of discovering the essence the whole time I was yet searching for the form.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so there came to a point where I discovered, okay, here's the form, and gosh, the essence had been here the whole time. You know, but I was so focused on getting that form simply because I hadn't received it to begin with.
Uh-huh.
So I really needed to, you know, my brain kicks in, and I have to find the form. And it's kind of, you know, ignoring the jewel that's there and looking, you know, all around it, in the grass and everywhere. And it's like, it's right there. Just, you know, practice. If I had spent all that time that I had, you know, tried to find people and research and stuff and just practice the form maybe that I was given, you know, I could have maybe came to the same place, but that was my path. So, something I'm working on right now is, you know, having learned, from different teachers, people say, well, then what lineage do you use? You know,
well, that's a good question.
And I say, well, if I know Takata taught something, I just know she taught it. So here, I'm trained in these lineages. And so, you know, it's something I'm still working on right now. Because, you know, Mrs. Takata had, for instance, you know, when she had taught some of her masters, start on the abdomen, right? And some of her master students learned, start on the head, right?
Right.
I start on the head. you know, although I was taught both ways. And so there's a choice there, you know, to be made. So when I teach my students, I say, start on the head. So they could say, well, you're teaching out of this lineage, but, you know, I'm not sure. It's something I'm still working on right now. That's one place that I still am discovering for myself.
Uh-huh.
Last week, I, finally got accepted, into the Reiki Alliance.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, they want you to write down your lineages. Oh my gosh. That was crazy. And I just wrote on their form. I said, you know, I can write this all out, but really, you know, I'm going to have to explain all this. You know, I'm going to have to explain this to somebody. So I was really hoping they were going to give me somebody who would at least maybe understand, you know, a little bit more of the history of Reiki. And I was lucky because Marta Getty was my interviewer.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I think I was really fortunate. I was like, okay, she's been around, you know, doing this for a while, so she understands.
Oh, so, she lived through your whole story.
Yeah.
Literally.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? So, yeah, you know, so they wanted me to pick one lineage, you know? And so I decided, well, I'm closest with, Marsha Holligan.
Uh huh.
So, you know, I picked Marsha Holligan back to Barbara Weber.
Right.
And, you know, yeah. So, see, I'm still struggling with, like, you know, do we have to pick? And, you know, my other teacher, Helen Borth, said to me, you know, in 10 years time, lineage isn't going to be that important. So then I have that, you know, processing in my head because this is, you know, so yeah. Sometimes we just have to keep practicing and see what we discover, right?
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, this is something that I'm getting from the interviews that I've been doing this year, or maybe even starting with last year, that the way that this, well, I hate to just keep using generalities, but the way that lineage and practice is being thought of is so different than when I was, quote, raised as a Reiki student. You know, it's just,
mm-hmm.
and maybe some of these questions will become irrelevant. And maybe the question of were you actually touched by a master or were you initiated, you know, over the internet or through distant treatment, which, you know, kind of freaks me out on one level. But on the other hand, you know, if people get value out of it, then that's my judge. And I don't know, there's something about, Justin and I talked a lot about compartmentalization and how each generation seems to be decompartmentalizing things. And I see it as that it goes with this movement I believe in, which is a movement that I have observed through my reading of spiritual practice. It's like, you know, in the medieval times, everybody thinks of the medieval times as being very dark and, you know, everybody wore gray or brown or black and there wasn't any color in the clothes except for the royalty. Mm. And there was this very interesting thing also that the souls of the people felt very black. I don't really think that they were. They were just, they just had their mind on survival. And the other people who didn't have their mind on survival physically had their mind on survival spiritually. And those were the people in the mostly in convents and monasteries and other kinds of spiritual practices that sort of were cloistered. And then through these, you know, hundreds of years, we've moved out until everything is out in the open now. You know, like these compartments of these little monastery rooms have, you know, just opened, the doors have opened. You know, the Dalai Lama is teaching the public. I mean, that would have been unheard of 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's just an amazing time, and I just feel that we're in this wave of ultimate responsibility. Like, we are responsible for the whole of who we are as human beings. Our soul, our spirit, our actions, our physical body, our physical health. We can't lay that on the doctors anymore, because it's way too much responsibility for them, and, you know, it doesn't work. They just get put on a pedestal, which is not good for any human being, and then when they fall off, it's really a drag. So then we're into litigation, right? So it's just been very interesting to see in my 30 some years of Reiki how this movement has actually moved past. So when people ask me, you know, who's your successor? I have said for many years that I don't know if I'll have a successor. Well, who's going to hold the Reiki energy? Well, you. And, you know, I talk to my colleagues about corruption. You know, they're always worried about, you know, if I am friends with somebody who practices a different form of Reiki, will I change my own practice? And I said, well, that's a weird question to ask me, because for me, only you can determine your practice and then decide whether it's congruent to this practice or not. I can't make that decision for you. So it's been fascinating to be on the sidelines now with the Reiki Alliance and to see their membership team struggle and be total champions for me of holding a kind of very strong paradox of having an association that says that they're practicing a certain system, knowing that each master has their own path, and that expression of that system sometimes looks very different, or it feels very different. And then being able to welcome members, new members in, such as you, who come with such a decompartmentalized path, I guess we could call it, so that it's not too it doesn't feel like I have judgmental connotations on it. So it's just fascinating, and I have to applaud the membership team of the Reiki Alliance, because I think they're doing an incredible job in very trying times, because they're sitting on the cusp of this. Do you know what I mean? And you're part of that cusp. Wow.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for myself, I've talked to people who have been on, let's just really generalize and say, like, you know, several, like one side of the camp and then people on the other side of the camp, in terms of, you know, people, there's people who practice, let's say, you know, like Takata's, you know, way. And then there's people who practice, you know, this person's way or that person's way, or very unique ways. Or,
right.
And having been exposed to, you know, what I call like non-Takata Reiki style, and then having to, you know, finally, you know, really go and find how Takata taught, you know, it's been an interesting journey in the respect that the people along the way, some people I met have only learned, you know, Takata style Reiki, and some were very unaware that anything else was really being, you know, practiced, or there was other ways of learning Reiki out there.
Right.
Like Marsha Halligan, you know, I mean, gosh, you know, although she was trained in 83, she is very much a Luddite. I mean, she lives in the middle of nowhere.
Really?
In Wisconsin. Yeah, doesn't have, you know, still has draft horses, you know, on her farm.
Wonderful.
Yeah, doesn't have high school internet, anything like this.
Wonderful.
So when I got finally in contact with her, it was like she was a time capsule, because...
Exactly.
It really was like, what? Like, she had no idea her teacher had changed the name of the system and added levels and, you know, whatever. So it was very unique to find her. So I guess I come from a place like, if people want to practice this style of Reiki, that's fine. If they want to practice this style, and, you know, that's fine. I mean, my own journey, I was drawn, you know, with this desire, this burning desire to practice, you know, Takata style for whatever reason.
Right.
That was there. And so that's what I give to my students. And I do it in a way that, like, okay, I try to explain to them, like, okay, here's my lineage, but you don't have to do that. You don't have to go and train with all these different people. You know, I only did that to discover what I was looking for. And beautiful. That, you know, so, yeah.
Well, you know, this is what's so timeless about the story of Reiki, and that is this, you really touched me when you said, well, that's what I was looking for. And it's like, in the story of Mikao Usui, there is a line that my grandmother said about his reading the sutras that I always hear a voice when I say it. And she said, and one day he found what he was looking for. And I don't take that off into extrapolation about what he actually found. I just got that it was this feeling inside.
Yeah.
That we all, as human beings, have this desire to go on a search and to find our home, our answer, our place to be, whatever that is. And I think your story is so beautiful, Robert. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's wonderful. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.